Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right. 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling revelry.
No, no.
Sibling revelry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling revelry.
That's good.
Stella McCartney and Mary. Stella and Mary. Stella and Mary. Mary.
Stella and Mary McCartney.
Mary McCartney. You know, it's funny because you know way better than I, but how many different English accents there actually are. There's so many.
Yeah,
there's just so many.
Yeah, I mean, every little nook and cranny of England has a different type of accent. It's pretty cool. The girls, you know, Stella and Mary have some American influence in their accent. So there are certain things that Stella will say that sound more American than a typical sort of, you know, born and raised English girl, but that's because of their mom.
Yeah, no, I know. And I watch religiously the Great British Bake Off. So I just love the show.
It's the Great British Baking Show.
Baking Show.
And
hold on. Hey, what's happening?
Oh, God. Your life gives me anxiety. Like, no wonder. Your dogs give me anxiety.
I know.
Maybe that's the problem.
Okay, we're keeping this in because I want everyone to just experience what I'm experiencing. But anyway, so the Great British Baking Show. Love. And
it's
everyone has a different accent. And some of these people, this one woman in the last one, I couldn't even understand her, but I think she was from Liverpool.
Oh yeah. Liverpool.
It was crazy. Anyway, all this to say that I fully understood Stella and Mary McCartney, 100% clear. And everything they were saying. Holy
Oliver,
shit.
Oliver, this is unacceptable.
What the fuck?
This is an unacceptable introduction from my best friend. I mean, she's like my best friend. The good thing is we are going to keep this in because she'll get a kick out of this. But so let me just talk while Oliver's doing this. So Stella and I have known each other. I met Stella when I was like 18 and we became really fast wonderful friends, and we've been friends ever since. And I was so excited to interview her and Mary. And of course, I've had over the last two decades had amazing, amazing times with the girls. But Mary, I really didn't meet Mary until she did a photo shoot with me when I was doing, when Stella was launching her lingerie. And that's when I met Mary, and she's just so wonderful and lovely. And the whole family is truly amazing. So it's really nice. It was nice to talk to them together about what it was like growing up. And
yeah, I was scared to sort of, I was scared to ask any real questions. And I also felt like the third wheel. So I had to like, I had to work my way in there because you guys were all so tight, you know, and it was all this banter. I'm like, oh, God, what do I do? Like, yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away.
No, but Ollie, you know what was amazing was we realized that you guys had never met. It was like so weird. I mean, we have like real memories of friendship, Stella and I. And like the fact that you guys have never met is so crazy and kind of just validates how I have this like other weird life somewhere else. You know, it's like across the pond that you never come to Europe. You never come to England.
No, you, no way.
You, and I have this whole weird life over there that you've never seen.
I know, but you have a, you know, especially back in the day, it was like Penny Lane is in my ears and you were in that whole world.
So we talked about growing up on their organic farm and we talked about their close relationship throughout their lives. And they moved around a lot. You know, it was sort of like they had this really simple English countryside farm life. And then like they'd get on the plane and they'd be like, okay, Paul would be like, kids, let's go, you know, to Stade de France for four nights and they go play, you know, four nights in a stadium in France or all over the world. I mean, so they had a very interesting, that was a, you know, strong juxtaposition of lifestyle.
But they're very, I mean, like you said, you know, we come from, you know, a celebrity family, but we don't come from the Beatles. I mean, that's Paul McCartney. I mean, that's just crazy, but they seem so cool, well-adjusted. They're obviously in love, these two sisters. They're so much fun. And even though I haven't met them, I felt like I had at the end of it. It was like, I was just a part of the crew. Fun girls.
Ollie, why don't you introduce
Stella and Mary McCartney. Blackbird singing in the dead of the night.
Okay, ladies, welcome to our podcast. This is really fun for me. So for context.
Aw, you guys are so cute.
So for context, Stella and I have known each other. We met, actually, do you remember the first time we met?
If we both are on the same reality. In my view, it was that when I won Fashion Designer of the Year at the VH1 Vogue.
That's right, darling. So we met at the, and there was an after party. Do you remember the after party?
Oh, I don't remember that because I was so completely blown away that David Bowie had given me the award and he never leaves the room. And I was like, fuck, David, are we allowed to actually use blasphemy?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck them.
Yes.
So David gave the award and then they had my, and it was funny because I don't know if I can say it. Anyway, there was a bit of sort of hesitance with David and then I turned around and Dad was there and it was like a surprise. It was a double whammy. So I don't know if I remember much after that, but I remember meeting
you. Well, we went to a party.
The after party. Anthony Hopkins had a rave.
I was walking in on the Queen taking a dump and I was so embarrassed.
We went, there was an after party. I forget where it was.
It was the Queen's New York apartment. We have to name drop as many people as we can in this story.
It was?
No, it wasn't. I'm not sure if the Queen of England. I'm not talking about Queen.
Oh, the Queen of England. It was her. Yeah. So the Queen was there. So we went. It was at some like hotel at downtown. And I remember because it was the first time we met. And I remember walking in after the whole thing. And you were standing there with Keith Richards in the doorway, checking people's clothes as they walked in, feeling them, going for fur and for leather.
Yeah.
And making sure everybody knew how you felt about it.
How can I not remember that moment?
I remember. I was like, what are you doing? You're like, I'm feeling everybody's clothes.
Feeling you. And did you go and leave the party at that stage? Or did you go, feel me?
I ran out.
She went and changed.
But that's where we first met. And then from then on, we've been friends forever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've heard of you guys forever. I've never met. I don't know why.
We're really good friends because I felt you in such a way that you're like, I want to know her longer and better and deeper.
It's true. We had a lot of fun nights, days, a lot of good laughs, a lot of good tears. And then I met Mary. Mary, do you remember when we first met?
I do not, but all my favorite people, I don't. What I was thinking about is one of my favorite Kate moments is when one of the last times we all met was when Stella and I flew over and we were going to Coachella that epic weekend where Dad was playing. And you literally, we got off the plane and you like drove in like on spot, on time, and like opened the door. I had my iPhone had just started doing all that slow-mo and I was like opening the window, filming you and Stella's hair blowing and slow-mo.
Well, the first time we met was when we did a photo shoot.
Yes.
We have actually...
Oh, yes, in that bed in the Barclay Hotel. And we were repeat playing.
Wait, that's when you first met her? Yeah.
No, I met you before in New York in King Street.
Yeah, but that's the first time we like connected.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We had met.
You were basically naked, babe, on a bed.
I was naked. I was like, let's get to know each other. Stella's.
I should tell you, it was a professional shoot as a photographer.
Are you now not a little bit bummed that you haven't met us?
Yes, I am. And if you get a chance, you should photograph me naked rolling around because...
In my underwear. Yeah.
And then I have to put Creep by Radiohead on repeat because that's literally the only song we played the whole time.
Oh my God. Stella, have you done men's underwear yet?
And then Stella, you can style him.
No, but I will do it. I'll do it for you. I'll make one pair... of men's.
Oh, a one of one. Or we could do an NFT underwear knickers. For me.
Oh, that's good. Men's knickers is how we should phrase it.
Well, guys, let's get into it. So we always start asking about where you grew up. I mean, you guys, obviously, it's a very iconic story. Your father, Paul McCartney, married your beautiful mother, Linda. Linda is American, was American.
New Yorker.
And did you always consider yourself half English, half American?
I remember saying to people we were half Liverpudlian, half American, because our accent was this weird sort of combination of like going to visiting family in Liverpool, and then we go to Scotland, and we grew up in London, and then we'd go to New York to see family all the time. So
I always would say we were very much half American, half English.
Yeah.
A little more American at the beginning, actually, I think, in... I would say.
Controversial.
Well, just because we spent more time, I think, with our American side of the family. Mm-hmm. And I think that when it came to food or when it came to like kind of, I don't know, we were like, I feel like a lot of my memories were more America. But definitely 50-50. But I would always say that we were very bilingual and that I would say raspberry.
But where was home
like
base?
Stella can
London.
Do a good
As a kid, we where was like home base?
You we know? Were born in London. We're Londoners.
But we grew up on an organic farm in East Sussex. So that really is where we grew up. Because London, we were born in London, but we moved quite quickly to a very sort of isolated farm. So we had a weird kind of upbringing between cities, going on tour, being in stadiums with 200,000 people, clapping at our parents and freaking out. And then we go back to a state school in southern England on, you know, in a field with rabbits hopping around.
Mm. So great.
I think that's one of the reasons we're so close is because we're 2 years apart in age. Like all of the sort of traveling and moving around we would do, Stella and I were always sort of each other's company and always by each other's side. So.
And James is, it's just the three of you with mom and dad, yeah?
Yeah.
And James is how old?
7 years younger.
6 years younger than me.
Our sister Heather as well. If you've watched the Get Back.
Oh, yeah, Heather, that's right.
If you've watched the Get Back documentary, she's a little cute blonde and New Yorker that comes in all the time skipping around.
And if you haven't watched the Get Back documentary, then we're going to just hang up now. So
I've started it. I haven't finished it.
It's so inspirational. It's crazy. And it's so humanizing. You know, it's like you have this idea of this iconic band and that they just shit gold. But the truth is it's just they're a band, you know, and they're just feeling it out and they're doing it. It happens to be iconic, sort of epic music. George Harrison leaves and they're like, eh, okay, like, let's keep going. Also, I'm like, what? The fucking Beatles just left. And they're like, whatever.
It's also a bit more than that in the sense that I think everyone bought into the fact that they were enemies then. So it's sort of like opening a lid on the fact that they were collaborating, creating, going through the process. So it's incredible.
Mm. Yeah, and it also really, I think, hones in on the dynamic. Your father is just a worker. Like, he works. He's like a machine.
Well, I think what's interesting about this moment is it's a family. And I think we all have our one thing that connects us all quite well, I think, is a love of family. And then we have our careers, and that's another family. And I think that we're very lucky and blessed in that respect that we have those two perspectives, all of us.
When did it hit you that there was something abnormal about your family? You know, because I know for us, there's like that moment where it just is until you actually kind of realize like, oh, my parents are...
I think for me, I mean, I was very aware... Like when I got to an age where you paid attention to what was number one in the charts, or, you know, you started getting involved, you know, and we grew up in an era where music videos started to happen, VH1 started to happen, MTV. So I became aware of it when I saw Dad and Mum on telly. I was less aware of it when I was very young, when I watched them on stage in Wings, for example.
Right.
It didn't occur to me, but I remember becoming aware when I was at school and Dad was number one with Michael Jackson. And
right,
I was
with
like,
Michael on the carriage. Yeah.
Like I was horrified. I was like, oh, God, you know, Dad, really, Ebony and Ivory, for real? So, you know, it was like there was kind of a horror and embarrassment attached. And I guess, you know, you will have had it, I'm sure, when you miss the bus and you're like, no, you can drop me off here, Dad. And you're like, oh, God, you know, you didn't want to. So I think I was aware, probably early teens, personally.
But then also there's a funny thing that... I was thinking about the other day that because, you know, you guys know, it's sort of everyone goes like, was there a moment? But in a way, it's your family. So your family is the norm that you know. So we did grow up going on tour and things, but more like when we would watch TV and we'd have like TV with dinner with on our laps, on the sofa, on the couch, watching TV. And then Dad would come in and start playing a song on the guitar, like acoustic. And we'd be like, Dad, could you like go somewhere else to play this, please?
Right.
Or watching the television. And he's
it still
like,
happens, though, quite
and, yeah, and he's like, but dude.
I was going to say, your dad always ends up at some instrument somewhere.
And, yeah. And so he'd be like, anywhere. But do you know how many people would be desperate for me? And I suppose that's a bit like, oh, yes, you are Paul McCartney, but could you go and do it in someone like, we're watching this, we respect you, and you are, but. Like we're
right,
watching.
But please, I'm trying to watch television.
It's like when Mom would show up to hot lunch in like an outfit, and I'd just be like, I can't.
You just want your parents
it.
To be like everybody else.
Yeah, just like wear sweats and
you
like
say Mom turned up to hot lunch. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, like if she was passing out pizza, like it wasn't like a
normal
mom.
She was volunteering as the parent in the school.
If there's any British people listening, hot lunch, it's not a thing on this over here. Hot lunch. Heartland, no, we don't do, it's like, what is hot lunch? Lunch is lunch, whether it's...
No, well, no,
a hot lunch.
School provides a lunch that is steaming.
It's just the idea of your mother turning up to hot lunch in a hot outfit
that's fit. She's fit lunch.
Well, maybe she didn't understand it either. That's why she was wearing all these outfits.
The hot clothes.
Now I understand what hot lunch is. Say no more.
But now,
but
Mum would wear like odd socks and she would put together her own looks. I mean, she was hugely influential. Stella, like she'd wear designer and then something she bought from a vintage store and then wear something secondhand and put it all together and like break things up. And
I mean, I found
that was quite embarrassing, but now I'm so proud of
it. I saw something the other day that cracked me up so bad. So I had a birthday party recently, it was 70s, and I was looking through all my mum and dad's clothes, like all their Wings stuff, because it was 70s, and I found this pair of dungarees with like did like amazing dungarees, like they're like all embroidered with wings on the pockets on the arse.
Oh no!
Like
Can I have some?
Studs everywhere, and like this patch up. And I just assumed they were mums. And I was like, oh, I'm going to rock like a dungaree look to my party. These are fierce. I'm going to get her like platforms. Put them on. They're tiny, tiny. And then my daughter, Bailey, is like, oh, I'll wear them. They've got flares. Like, you die. And then I saw something literally yesterday where Dad's like, hi, 70s. He's got his mullet, full mullet wings. And he's like, hi, I'm Paul. And he's rocking the dungarees. And I'm like, those moments are pretty precious.
Yeah.
But are all those Stella's clothes archived and saved?
Stella's
all the
archive is insane.
Yeah. I there's a lot of it's kept actually with funny. I don't know if your mum kept her stuff. If she didn't, I hate that.
She
breaks
didn't.
My heart. But because I do, Dad, it's good. Like he kept a lot, and mum and dad kept a lot. They kind of, I think they knew that it was important. And also, it was a huge part of my career looking at their wardrobe because it was all stage gear from the 70s. A little bit of his Beatles stuff too. But what I realized is they shared a wardrobe. So my earliest memories are like looking up at their clothes, but it was like all one. So it was very androgynous, very like, and I things I presumed were his. Were hers, yeah. Were his.
I think it's such
a big part of how I design, that whole kind of like you're borrowing your boyfriend's, how did we get there? But I speak to a lot of people, like George, for example. I've been to his archive at Olivia's house, and he's got a few things. And like John, I speak to Sean Lennon, he's like, John didn't keep anything, Yoko kept nothing. And so I feel for you,
going back to the documentary real quick, but in a fashion sense, one thing that stood out aside from sort of the music and the Beatles creating was
Paul's eyelashes.
Was everyone coming into the studio looking fabulous? And was this something that they thought about before they get up in the morning? Did they lay out their clothes or did they just throw shit on? Because everything was incredible.
If they did, I think it dismisses everything that's cool about them. There's no way they laid it out. But it is astonishing the fashion, you can see why one of the children had to be a fashion designer, right?
Mm-hmm. Like,
it's
1,000%.
But also, at the moment, I'm directing this documentary about the history of Abbey Road Studios because it's 90 years of Abbey Road. And in interviewing people, they kind of say that London at that time was like black, like it was just sort of very much suits and a shirt and a tie. Yeah. And then when you a bowler hat, but they said when you got to the 60s, it felt like everything turned Technicolor.
Yeah.
So I think that they were dressing like a yellow shirt or this and just sort of collecting things.
But it's so amazing because when you watch Get Back, it's like George is like insane. I mean, like, all of them, it's insane. And George
is George, so hot.
George
crazy.
Was,
it's crazy.
The thing is like, oh,
that music, it's almost like it really is magical. It holds, the way that young kids respond to it is something that doesn't happen really with any other band. Now we're looking at three generations responds to it similarly, become obsessed, you know?
It's definitely a completely connective tissue. It's one of the very few.
But let's talk about your guys' childhood.
Did you this leads into that. Did you ever hate being the daughter of your parents? Meaning like, Jesus, it's just so much, you know? Like, please leave us alone. I just want to live a normal life.
I never hated it. I definitely chose to not go into that world because I hated everyone else around it, to be honest. I didn't hate it or them. I hated the media for quite a long time. I was very angry at how mean they were to mum, how mean they were and ridiculed us for being vegetarians. You know, which of course now is like, you know, we were pretty ahead of our time there. I hated other aspects of it. I didn't love getting pulled out of school to go on the road when I was like 18. I was a bit bummed, but I never even thought of it.
Also, we went to like a state school, like a normal school, local school. So even though it's great because we were around normal people and it was a really good grounding upbringing, we still did stand out quite a lot in that area. Mm-hmm. So there were times where it was like really awkward and you felt a bit awkward.
Right, and it's about also to understand like how do you know who likes you for you? You know, how do you know what friends want to be a part of your life because of you?
That's why we found each other.
I
I think we're going to the schools we went to, we probably had less of that because it was so normal.
It's like if they were nice to you.
It was the local village kind of vibe. So
yeah, it's almost weird, isn't it? It's almost like the opposite. People think that they'd want to be your friend, but it's actually, at least for girls, maybe, like, it was harder for me to have friends because...
Yeah, girls are harsh. I think you're also just more paranoid, aren't you, being in our situation? You know, you're kind of like walking in a room, you go, do they know? We used to go under a different name for most things.
But the thing is that you guys had what we had, like it, which is a testament to all of our parents. Like there was a very conscious decision to not be enmeshed in the world all the time. Like we moved to Colorado, we grew up on a ranch, you guys were in the country. There was this sort of understanding that our parents had of us to be in nature and to have like a more normal, simple.
And you know what? I don't think our parents, but were your parents like this? I don't think they cared so much what people thought about them. And I know when I spoke to mom about it, like, how did you feel when people were like saying you dressed horribly and like, why is he married to her? And she was like, as long as the people that I love me, I really don't care what other people think. And I think maybe that's what got us all through her.
I mean, how do you all feel about the fact that we're not doing that? Like, I struggle so hard with the fact that my company's in London.
All the time. We talk about it all the time.
I'm lucky enough that I have a farm in the country and we go every weekend and I have four, like, we have that too. But my kids are in the system in London and I am so freaked out about it.
Yeah,
it's
no,
so
I mean,
crazy
because
it's not what you would have expected.
6 years ago, I took the kids, Mike, I have three kids, out of L.A., and moved to Colorado for 2 years and put them in school there just so they could at least have the opportunity to have what Katie and I had. You know?
What ages did you do that?
I have 14, 11, and 8. That's all they are now.
Yeah, so it was early ages.
It was a little earlier and it was incredible. I mean, it's just that freedom, that independence, that you don't have to worry about them. They don't have to worry about themselves. They get to feel what it's like to be alone and deal with them.
I know. Deal with just being... get bored. But don't you also find, I mean, that takes such balls. And I'm so annoyed at myself. I haven't got the bollocks to just go, you know what? And especially after COVID, when we can do everything on Zoom, like we don't have to do it. So
I know.
It makes me think even more how our parents really were like special, you know.
All four of us speaking, though, the bonus is that we had a childhood without the phones and being contactable all the time. We could go out, like you two could go out, play around and come back when you were hungry and nobody really watching you. And so we did have that growing up. And Stella and I in Scotland, we would go out in the morning and we just literally walk. You and I would build camps together. We'd collect things. We'd make games up out.
And there are greatest memories.
And that's what makes us so close. Like I was on a photo shoot in Scotland and I saw a flower that reminded me of Stella and I took a picture and sent it and she knew. I was like, I don't need to say a thing. I was with this person. I was like, wait, I'm going to get a response back immediately. And she's like, like laughing. And it just takes you right back to that moment just looking at one flower.
So how did your parents actually meet?
They met. Our mother was a photographer, a professional photographer. And
pretty much started Rolling Stone magazine. So they met. When I found her work.
First woman to have a cover of Rolling Stone magazine, Linda McCartney, right?
So they were dad, mum. Mum had taken pictures. Do you know the animals, House of Rising Sun, that song?
Yeah.
So mum, I know this story because when I became a photographer, I sat mum down and I like interviewed her about her career because suddenly you care about what you're... I'm like, oh, I've never paid any attention to her. Mm-hmm. We were like, she made it look so easy. And then it was like, hang on, I need to ask you first. But anyway, they were at her... She had done a photo shoot with the animals in New York and then she was in London on a photo assignment. And Eric Burden said from the animals said, when you're in London, I'll take you out. And she took...
Because they all fancied the pants of mum.
They were
New Yorker. Like she was this kind of Amazonian. Like it was like, who are you? Where are you from? Like natural blonde, no makeup, New York accent. They hadn't really encountered many of those in London.
Yeah. And just in love with rock and roll and just like an amazing photographer. So they took her to, the animals took her to a club called the Bag of Nails in London in Soho. And dad then tells the Bag of Nails.
The Bag of Nails.
Bag of Nails.
Bag of Nails.
and then he says he was sort of sitting in the club, but like on a balcony, and he looked down across and he could see this blonde woman, and she just really caught his eye. And she was there, and they obviously were playing eye contact games with each other. And then
who was playing that night? Was that the Eric Clapton?
No, then they they were in this club. Then she got up to leave, and he said, "Oh, it was like she was leaving, so I had to like take my moment." He stood up and sort of stood in the walkway and said, "Hi, I'm Paul." Like, and they introduced each other, and he was like,
"That actually gives me like little goosebumps. It's so cute. Can you imagine that?
So cute."
Blocking her. Imagine being blocked by Paul McCartney in the period that you're talking about, by the way, because she's pregnant with Mary in the Get Back documentary. So just picture that, Paul McCartney, blocking your way. I don't mean to be weird, but...
With the eyelashes.
Oh my God, he was hot. He was hot as shit.
He was so handsome.
I was like, oh,
I never thought about it like that, Paul, until I saw...
That beard.
It was just like, I was like, God, he's so... put together and handsome.
Yeah, I would have made love to him back then.
Peter Jackson and the technology he used, that because that's 16 mil film and he blew it up into, they all look like
Avatar. It's so amazing. It you can see it differently. You feel like you're actually there. It's such a different experience. Okay, so then they meet at Bag of Nails, and then how many years later is she pregnant with the first? No, wait, Heather...
She had a daughter, and then she moved over.
And then you were, how many years later were you born after they met?
You.
I was born in 16.
A hot, illegal minute. Well, literally, no, like
immediately pregnant.
A year and a half.
After Bag of Nails.
Like 6 months later, baby in the oven.
I think they met 67, and then she went back to America, and then they came back, and then she moved.
Okay, so it was a couple years later.
Oh, I thought it was in the church. See, I know nothing. That's why I'm letting Mary do all the talking.
So you were? Do you remember when Stella was born?
No, because I was only two.
How did you not remember this being born?
Oh, her little red hair coming out like.
Stella has always been dramatic because when. She was born, mum had a, like, she had to have an emergency cesarean because she was the placenta was in the way. So Stella, if it wasn't for modern technology, my little sis wouldn't be here. So.
And mum, probably.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I was emergency C. I, like, ate shit and died because I was in there too long and I took a dump. Meconium was in the fluid and I went... And had meconium aspiration.
He was in ICU, the NICU
if
for.
If you, Kate, do not make him a T-shirt that says I almost died.
I almost ate shit and died.
I will not be your friend anymore.
I ate shit and almost died.
I ate shit and almost died.
Almost is quite good. Almost is a critical addition to that.
What was your first memory of Stella, Mary?
We shared a bedroom. We were in London and we shared a bedroom, and it's, my memories are literally as they carried on, they started as they meant to carry on. We were in a bed next to each other and we would just talk, and then we would run around together. And if one of us had to go to the bathroom, we'd wake the other one up and we'd run into the bathroom together and keep each other
company. There were witches under our bed. There were witches under our bed.
Literally
jump off the bed. Did you have witches under your bed?
I still have witches under my bed. I am the witch in my bed. Right.
She goes under her own bed.
I'm a witch under my own bed.
We were always that close. And then we went through like our more teens kind of competitive years, but we still shared friends. And then when mum died, I would say all of the, any of that competitive kind of rivalry thing.
Well, were you guys always really close, or was there that moment where it was close and then there was a separation because of that competitive spirit? And
So we went to the country when I was about five, and we mum and dad basically were strange creatures, and they chose to just do the exact opposite of what one would expect. So we went to Scotland and we lived in a house basically as big as the room that we're in, which is not a massive room. All six of us, one toilet, you know, like all of the four children at that stage in one room, bunk beds, you know. And so we moved from London and we moved to a round house in the middle of a forest in the south of England. and we shared a bedroom. Me and Mary and our other sister Heather and our youngest brother lived in a cot in the dining room. And, you know, you'd bump your head in the morning and all that kind of stuff. Why am I telling you this? What happened was not only did we get to a stage where I think we just all lived on top of each other. So right. Mary became like 14, 15, 16 and had all her friends. And I was like, can I be your friend? Can I be in your gang? And it was just like, no, back off. You're really annoying. And these are my friends and these are my clothes. And just,
but they're still all your friends.
But then they're all my friends. They're like me more anyway. But the point being is that I remember.
So we never separated.
More than a harsh kind of competitiveness at that age. It was just like, no, you can't borrow my jeans. That was that was harsh enough for me. And then
like typical sibling, like this is just annoying. Like,
I'll design my
get out of my stuff. Yeah.
I'll screw you. And then you'll want my jeans. But then I think there was probably when we both started to find our careers, I think unspoken, which we don't really talk about. There was probably a bit of a sense where, like, you know, then I went to St. Martin's, I was in London, you were in London, and we're both kind of a bit, you know, had a bit of a thing where I was doing fashion, you were starting to do photography.
We never fell out,
but I think we secretly were a bit
like when you went to Chloe, I came and was taking pictures.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I think we've always supported each other very much.
So not such a
shot loads in my career, my campaigns, like early campaigns.
Yeah.
She did some of my best campaigns, I would say.
Oh, cool.
It's good fun when we work together because, you know, we're both quite tough on ourselves. We're like, anything you do, you want to do it better. We're like, did I do it? You know, so with Stella, it wasn't like, oh, I'm taking pictures for Stella. It was like a proper shoot. It was like she, as a client, she would always let you as an artist, as a photographer, go further than most other people would. Like she'd let it be dark and you didn't have to overlight things and it doesn't have to show the clothes off so much. It can be a vibe. So I've always loved working with Stella.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just think it's really fun too because Stella, you know, from my perspective as well, and probably the same because, I mean, I was right out of high school and we were so little. But like the love for the art of like fashion, I mean, it was always, like you were always doing it. You were always in a vintage store. You were always looking at old lace. Like I remember being in Paris with Stella. We were like vintage shopping. Like no matter where we were, you were always creating. Even before, you know, these were Chloe days. You know?
And
what was nice is that first campaign we did together with Kate Moss. I used mum's Polaroid camera. Her 10x8. Yeah. I used mum's 10x8 camera, and we had old Polaroid film.
Yeah.
So it's like a proper.
Yeah. But I remember actually doing that shoot. You did that shoot with. What was it for? Another magazine?
That double page spread.
With Chris. Yeah.
Wow, that was an amazing photo.
I'm obsessed with Outer Known. I've been obsessed with Outer Known. I've been obsessed with Kelly Slater just in general for a long time.
I don't want Kelly Slater's wife to be upset with me, but I do call Kelly my boyfriend in the house.
I know. He's an incredible dude. I mean, he just won, I think it was Pipe Masters. I mean, at age 50 or 51, it's crazy.
50 looks great. He looks hot. So not only is Kelly Slater hot, we love this brand of clothes. I love what he's doing with it. He is very focused on sustainability and that's his mission. You know, when you love the ocean and you're in it all the time, I think you really look around and you're like, I can't believe how careless people are and how they trash our waters. Mm-hmm. And so he's decided to, you know, give back, create this line.
It's incredible stuff. It's men and women's clothing. And Aaron has like 80 of the jumpsuits that I've gotten over the years. I have been a fan of Outer Known since the launch of it. I have sea jeans. I've got like, I don't know, maybe 4 of his ponchos.
Well, let's talk about some of the best-selling things so people know which ones. There's the blanket shirt, which is their all-time bestseller. Yep. So it's like the coziest shirt.
Yep.
So it feels as good as it sounds. It's like a blanket. Mm-hmm. And everyone should have one of these blanket shirts in their closet. So there's that. Then their jumpsuits. So the jumpsuits, like you're saying, Aaron, that's another one of their best sellings. They're easy. They're super flattering.
Yeah.
I just got a purple one. It's really cute.
So go to outerknown.com today and enter the code sibling at checkout and you'll get 25% off your full price order. That's outerknown.com. OUTERKNOWN.com. And remember to use the code SIBLING at checkout for 25% off. Check them out today, outerknown.com. And don't forget promo code SIBLING. Just type it in, S-I-B-L.
25%. That's going to give you some good dollars back.
Let's go. Let's go. You're going to love it.
I have a story about Blue Land because I actually saw this during COVID. I was doing like a rehaul of everything in my house because I basically didn't know what to do with myself. So I turned everything inside out and I started to look up like, what are the best possible hand soaps and, you know, surface, cleaning surface items, things like that. And I found Blue Land and I came across it and I ordered it and it came and I was completely obsessed. It's like a refill bottle. They're these beautiful bottles. They look amazing. They're super chic. And then you put these little refills in them. And it's like very easy to do, super eco-friendly. And one of the things I learned is that 5 billion plastic hand soaps and cleaning bottles are thrown away every year.
Jesus.
I mean, that's insane.
It's crazy.
5 billion.
Yeah. So just to explain real quick, just to be clear. So Blue Land, their bottles are amazingly beautiful, number one. So fill them with warm water. You pop in one of the hand soaps or the spray cleaner tablets, and within minutes you have a cleaning product, a powerful cleaning product in the most incredible sense. So there's iris, agave, there's lemon, there's lavender, eucalyptus, and that's the vibe.
Right. And then they have a kit. So like, that's what I got. I got the cleaning essentials kit. I also got their hand. I kind of bought everything.
Okay. So anyway, right now you can get 20% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/sibling. That's 20% off your first order of any Blue Land products at blueland.com/sibling, blueland.com/sibling.
Do you remember your first piece? Like, do you have that first piece that you ever designed?
I don't know where it is, but I remember it. I was 12 and it was the first thing I designed and made. And even then it was the faux suede. So it was completely plant-based and vegan. And it was like a very 80s bomber jacket in like salmon pink with like a reversible bomber.
And you made it. I mean, you made it yourself. And,
yeah, I don't know where it is though. I need to find it. I'm sure it's somewhere.
You know, the thing is there's very few people, you know, that have like talked the talk, walked the walk from the very beginning. And like the foundation of your guys' life, food, the kitchen, organic farm, being a vegetarian, incorporating that into your world, into your business, all the environmental stuff. I want to talk about how your mom created that for you guys. What was that like as a kid? And did you reject it? Were there moments where you were like, I want to be like every other kid, you know?
No, mom loved cooking in the home. The kitchen was the part of the home, like classically. And when they became vegetarian, they sat us down. They were like, we're going to become vegetarian. And because we were eating lamb and we looked out and we saw the lamb in Scotland and we like connected that we were eating lamb, but we were looking at cute lambs. So they were like, look, we don't want to cook. Mom's like, I don't want to cook meat anymore. And so then dad was like, we were like, what do you do then? There's a hole on the plate. What are we going to eat? So we've grown up as a family always discussing that. So.
And I think mom, I think that was the great thing about her. She was a great cook. And, you know, we both learned to cook watching her. Mary now has her own, you know, plant-based TV show that you've been on.
I've been on.
And Oliver's going to be on. Little G.
Oliver's next.
I'll be on it.
And, But you, I ate shit and nearly died. Have to wear that t-shirt for it.
That's what I'll wear on the show. Shit is plant-based.
Yeah,
I think.
It is.
You know, well, depends on
at the time. At the time in the womb, it was definitely
circular as well. If you look at it that way, it's like it ticks
all right. It's vegan shit.
Yeah. So I think it's funny. It was always the heart of the home. And so food was like, kitchen was the only, you know, it was everything. And, you know, it's funny, I found a photograph the other day of me, I'm not even one. And mum's in Scotland over the cooker and she's leaning over, looking in the oven. And I'm like draped on her back. And it's just so cute. It's like I'm in an all-in-one. It's like, oh, yeah. But I think all of that stuff, we come from a very creative family, yeah. And food was creative. It was part of the creative process.
Also
it wasn't a necessity. It was like creativity.
Mm. Mm. No, and also it's about, I think, you know, when they sat us down, like, we're not going to eat meat. It wasn't like, okay, we're not going to eat meat. It's like, what are we going to eat then?
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to do it? And that's what I love about our family is we'd be like, so what are we going to have for the festive holidays? We need something to slice. What are we going to have for, because we never wanted to be apologetic and make it be like, oh, to not eat cruelty free means that you eat taste free. That is not anything we've ever abided by in our family.
Yeah. And I think it's true. You know, not only is it a creative family, but it's a go-getter type of family. And I think, you know, Mum created her food brand, her vegetarian food brand in 1991. And again, it was completely unheard of. That it was pretty embarrassing. Yeah. It was like vegetarian sausages and veggie burgers. None existed in the world, I don't think. One brand in America that was for religious reasons. Like, yeah. And so food was not only the home of, you know, the heart of the home, brought us all together and tasted really good, but it also became a kind of point of difference. We were made fun of. I mean, I was thinking, Mum and Dad, were they the first celebrities on The Simpsons? Like that, I want to find out.
No. Were they not? No, I don't think so. Okay. But they were.
But anyway, that was all a bit vegetarian-y, and it was like, you know, there was always a bit of a kind of, we had to stick up for ourselves a bit. It was like, no.
Well, you know what's great now is it's not like it, because it was. Would you go out for dinner and then people are like, are you going ever? Why are you having a go at me? Like, I've never met you. Like, so you sit next to someone, it's like, I'm not having a go at you. But now it's very much more of a different world. Like, you can have conversations.
Were you guys ridiculed and stuff because of it? You know, I mean, you were seriously the pioneers of vegetarianism.
Yeah, a lot of bad food. It was like, you were oversteamed vegetables really. And like, you know, we don't really eat stuffed peppers or couscous.
We literally, if you give us a bad vegetable, we're like, oh, really? Like, it's punishment. But it still exists. It's still there. You know, if you go on an airline, the food is still like, I mean, I have to say, I'm surprised. I don't think I'll mention the airline, but you know who you are. They don't have like plant-based milk. It's like, what is that? How can there not be alternative milks in everywhere now? Like, that's nuts.
It's nuts.
That idea that it's like, you know, normal milk, no, and I'll have normal milk. It's like, what is that?
Like even when like the most Western doctors are now saying, you know what, we probably shouldn't be drinking so much milk. Mm-hmm. Then maybe everybody else needs to have some plant-based milk.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like we're very much like Mum was very good at this, actually. We both learned a lot watching and observing that was you know, if you tell people what to eat and you tell them off and you make them feel bad, you're just going to get them on the back foot. They're going to hate you. They're going to get aggressive. They're going to be defensive. So it was always like trying to just go, hey, just try this. See if you like it. Or don't even say it. Like my vegan shoes and my vegan bags, you would never know that I put the first ever mushroom leather bag on a runway in March in Paris. And you would never know it's made, you know. And that was always our little kind of secret
psychedelic thing. Mushroom.
And I think that this is also like you can lick the
bag.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
part of the.
You're speaking Oliver's language. But the thing is that you were always like that. Like there was no, you weren't the friend that was like, you know, ever getting on me for eating a piece of meat or. I think
it sort of like showing how to cook something that's quick and easy.
Yeah, like you started when we started talking about Meatless Monday years ago, you know, and you started the whole Meatless Monday thing, and you can back that up with
science.
With science, talking about the importance of taking not only a day off meat for your own health, but the environment, what that does for the environment. There's so much that leans towards more of a plant-based living. That's an important thing for everyone to talk about versus it becoming like a war between the meat eaters and the plant-based eaters.
Does it feel to you that divide is better now? For me, I feel a bit less sort of put upon. I feel like we are able to talk about it and not be as judgmental of each other, do you feel?
Oh, yeah. To play devil's advocate just for a second, and it's a question. Let's just say that meat went away. And now let's say that we need to plant enough vegetables to sustain life on Earth as far as consumption goes. So now we're dealing with potential pollutions. How do we have sustainable farms to feed billions of people?
She knows everything. I've got this, Stella.
Technology is the savior of all of this. You know, now you're looking at, you know, growing in small units, using artificial light sources. You know, the technology will be the answer. And also, you know, growing in labs.
Vertical farming.
Less water, less electricity, less people, not less jobs, creating new jobs, creating new economies, not cutting down our rainforests, not killing beautiful, innocent creatures. I think that's one of the things that gets missed. And also one thing, so I obviously we are very passionate about this. One thing that I think gets missed and one thing that I think resonates with people that perhaps a little, you know, on the fence, it's a human rights issue as much as an animal rights issue. If you look at the meat trade, do any of us want to work there on a minimum wage? If not slavery, to be honest, in some of the places in the world, I'd rather clean out toilets in an airport, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Like there is a question also of human rights and actually the disease-ridden environments that people are living in, let alone the billions of innocent creatures that get killed. And we don't need that many carrots, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. We don't need this much meat, you know.
But could we eliminate the Monsantos, you know what I mean?
From a practical point of view, I think, for instance, the soya that is grown on the planet, the majority of the soya and the land is fed to cattle to then. So I don't think that's a practical way of doing it. And also, in my belief, and I think Stella too, I don't think there is an easy answer. It is, I think we all admit, not anyone doing it for the wrong reasons, but it is a very broken food system and there's no mm-hmm. easy solution. So it right. does need to be about people
no
coming together
that,
yeah. and deciding. And realistically, I think most everybody that really, really studies this and, you know, much more on it than us agrees that animal proteins are not the way forward. I mean, I've never met anybody that ever says that.
You know, we have a much greater chance of living longer if we eliminate our animal protein.
Yeah.
Like that is, we know that. We know that.
Even fish?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can,
the fish industry is the most sustainable.
Have you watched Seaspiracy?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's a really good documentary.
It's the most depressing side yeah. effect. Of
oh,
people
I mean,
not
the oceans are
the oceans
just
are
annihilated.
Terrible.
They've been annihilated.
Destroyed. And they are one of our greatest sources of oxygen on this planet.
Yep.
And this, I mean, it, I think, and farming of fish, I mean, it is dark, dark, dark.
Mm. The problem is it's so polluted and so. So sort of Frankenstein now that it's a hard one. It's sort of it all needs to become.
It's about changing minds through sort of the education of health, but it's also it's commerce, it's capitalism. I mean, yeah. that's really what it is. Because if there was no money in tuna fishing, then they wouldn't do it. If there was no money in shark fins, they wouldn't do it. So it's like you got to get to the root of it in a sense.
You have to replace bad industry with good industry if we are to survive. And we all know that. I mean, if you look at some of the biggest growing you know, businesses over the last few years, it has been plant-based food. If you look at the, you know, Impossible Burgers, those are the investments that people wish they made, rather they give a damn about the planet or damn about cows. You know what I mean? So the same will happen. It will happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just moving. It's moving in that direction.
Yes.
And
I think the thing is, it's very complicated and there's so many facts and there's no real answer. And it would just be great if everyone sort of accepted that it's a broken system and tried to figure out a really practical way, because there's not that much time to get it together now, is there?
Chrissy Hynde does this great thing. She does this thing with this, like, you know more about it than me. It's some happy cows. And so it's not saying you can't drink milk, but, you know, it's a tiny little community of cows that are pregnant. They're allowed to be pregnant. Take a little bit of the milk if you want it, but you don't kill the cow, take the baby away, make it venison, you know, veal.
Yeah.
You know, there's no hormones, there's no antibiotics. So it's just this lovely
But it doesn't make money.
But it doesn't make money. And it's, you know, but that kind of way.
Is there Ahimsa? It's the Ahimsa Dairy, and it's run, it's in Rutland in England.
But they
and
can't
it's run
fill
by
their demand. No,
it's amazing. Like,
they can't fill their demand because it's beautiful and it's pure and it's the way.
Yeah.
This is where we're at.
Going back to our upbringing, though, so mum, we had this incredible, you know, mum was a great cook. So just before we became vegetarian, she was a great cook. And then she would experiment and we'd all talk about things. And then people would come for dinner and they'd be like, well, look, if I could eat like this, if I had a meal like this every day, then I would eat more meat-free cooking. So eventually she ended up doing... That's amazing. But she ended up doing cookbooks. So she could just say, someone here... You can eat like this because here's all of our family recipes. So I think for us, that's the way it sort of, I find it, I find personally that it can become quite dark and depressing thinking about the industry. And I can't do much about that personally, except say, look, the way to do it is by stopping demand, I think, as a single person. And so therefore, we can give you recipes. We can come up with ideas. Let's talk about things. Let's get excited about food, eating it in the right way. And try and make it a bit more. Otherwise, it gets very doom and gloom, I think.
So this is an exciting one for me and for you, Kate. Mm-hmm. We are actually partners.
Partners with
investors.
Future.
We actually put our hard-earned money into this company.
That's right. That is right. So Future is an app. It is an app that is designed to keep people accountable to their fitness program. Oliver, you want to explain?
Yeah. So, okay. Look, most people in fitness and in sports, right? They've got a trainer right next to them. Everyone has a coach. And this basically is putting that coach into the palm of your hand. So the idea is that, you know, you create an account, you follow the steps, you talk about what you want to accomplish in your training. They will match you to a coach, which you can actually pick from. There's many, many coaches to pick from who are incredibly
so great.
And you FaceTime your coach, you email your coach, you text with your coach, and you put together a routine based on what you want to accomplish, but more importantly,
what's available to you.
Exactly. Based on what's available to you, the resources that you have.
And an Apple Watch, which I love. That's like my favorite part.
Yeah, they send you an Apple Watch so they can keep track and monitor your progress. They can monitor your heart rates. They can monitor your recovery. They can monitor your pulse oxygen. You know, they really have their thumb on your fitness. So it's kind of bringing a human touch to digital fitness.
This is really a personalized experience. So if you're ready to invest in your long-term health and wellness, you can get started with your Future coach right now with 50% off your first 3 months at tryfuture.com/sibling. Again, that's tryfuture.com/sibling. So Noom has launched a new app called Noom Mood. And this is really an app where you can learn to manage, you know, your anxieties, your stress, something that I know we all want. And they have created this app to help guide you to your mental wellness.
Yeah, because I will say this, having suffered anxiety and dealing with my 14-year-old right now who's going through some anxiety, you know, school anxiety and whatnot, a lot of people don't know where to start. You know, you have these feelings and you don't know what to do with these feelings. And Noom Mood is a great place to sort of that launch point. You know what I mean? Because sometimes it can get overwhelming. And this is a really great platform to guide you.
Yeah. I mean, they really hold your hand. So they create a daily curriculum. They also couple it with a one-on-one coach. So they guide you, encourage you on your journey. You know, they do really amazing things to really help you get into your groove. You know, I always say the thing about, you know, when you're looking at your mental fitness, it is like physical fitness, but you have to put it into practice little bits at a time for you to feel this, like that muscle strengthening.
And I think what Noom Mood does is it helps you sort of better understand your relationship with stress and negative thoughts and anxious thoughts. So you can take control of those thoughts and you can build the resilience, and they will help you develop these coping mechanisms that actually work. Hey, worry less and feel happier. So sign up for your trial at noom.com/sibling. That's noom.com/sibling. That's noom.com/sibling.
I want to just touch a little bit on when your mom was diagnosed, and I think it's something that a lot of, unfortunately, people have experienced, but you guys were quite young. How old were you when your mom was diagnosed with breast cancer?
Diagnosed is a question. Mid-20s. Yeah, I mean, the diagnosis, I never really thought about when she actually passed.
Stella and I shared a bed that night when we found out that news.
I remember, she passed away when I was 27, yeah. She was 29. Mm-hmm. And she'd sadly suffered 4 years, 5 years.
Maybe. No, 2 years of treatment.
Two years, but wasn't it? Oh, I felt like it was so much.
It felt like forever, but it was 2 years.
It was only 2 years. Mm.
And did that bring you guys really close?
Yeah, I mean, I think those moments, sadly, everything is just...
We turned to each other.
Else exists. Yeah, and I think, you know, if you don't have that... I mean, I think we have a thing in our family, it's like health is wealth, and really nothing else matters. So we, you know, we all have crazy lives, and we all can get riddled with anxiety and, you know, all these things, and something tiny can just be the biggest, you know, problem of a day. And I think that's one thing as a family, it's like, it doesn't matter what happens, nothing compares to that. So it kind of puts things into perspective, to say the very least. And I think that it definitely brought us all much closer together. I think the other thing for us, my daughter tells me every night, which is so cute, because she still wants me to. You know one thing? That's just hurting me. You know what what is interesting for us and a lot of people is obviously we couldn't tell anyone. So that was, you know, it wasn't like it is nowadays where people are like, actually, which is great if they can come out and they can talk about it in the public eye and they can be like, look, this, you know, check yourself, prevent this. This is preventative. You need to, you know, we very much went into a kind of close the doors. Nobody's can know, you know, it was a very kind of fragile moment, but also there was like nobody, you couldn't tell anyone. So I was at work, you know, we were all just carrying on as if nothing was happening, which is really shit.
Yeah. When she passed, I mean, just internally, like, obviously I know how sad I was, but, you know, of course, but like, how did you guys, like, was there a moment where it was like, because it's so soon for to feel like the torch was passed, you know, but did that kind of catapult any desire for you, like Mary, to really move into your work differently, or how you looked at raising, you know, your kids or having kids?
She didn't meet any of our kids, unfortunately. I think Stella and I were inspired by Mum, and we were close to Mum. So I think we had that time with her to talk to her about her career, and we talked about food and we talked about art and sort of her, you know, we got to sort of hang out with her to a certain degree. So
I think that's a really interesting question, though. When did we realise that we were, you know, it was our job to her proud?
But I was doing photography and food with her. I worked in Mum's archive with her. So for me, it was a bit of a different thing than for you. Because I was like doing exhibitions with her and the food thing. Yeah, whereas yours is probably quite different.
Yeah, well, I was in Paris. I was working in, you know, and I was heading up a brand in Paris at the time. And so it didn't really occur to me. I mean, again, we'd never compromise. I think that's one thing I was aware of, regardless of the question, is that not working in any way with animal products. Mm. I was the only one in the fashion industry, for sure, and I'm still one of the very few. But 25 years ago, I was an absolute freak of nature. And I was really aware. I remember becoming aware in an interview one day. I was like, God, that is the privilege that I was given in my chosen profession. That's where privilege really comes into play, that I didn't have to compromise my belief system for my chosen career. And because there's a lot of people that work in the fashion industry that don't want to work with animal products, but they have to pay the rent. So I think I was doing that anyway, because, you know, I would never be a hypocrite and work with animal products. But I think there became an age where after Mum passed away, where I was quite aware that there was more magnitude and weight to what I was doing, and actually I could do much, much more with it and to make her proud.
She would be so proud of you. She
had the legacy of what she and Dad started.
Yeah. And then, I just want to know, do you want the tears, or what's going on here?
Okay. I think that there's, you know, you guys have lived and have led extraordinary lives. It's very rare, right? So I think it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah. We want to do her proud. We want to do her proud. Like with the cooking show,
as you say now,
the cooking show, I've never been on TV presenting a cooking show. And to be asked to do that, suddenly it's like, well, do you want to do the first ever vegetarian cooking show on Discovery Plus? It's like, scared, but we have to make one proud. And it's like, yes, this is an amazing opportunity.
But you're not only, I think it's tied into, we're not only making our parents proud, and Mum, who's obviously not here and she's watching us right now, we're making her proud. She'd love this more than anything. Also, Mum would be the first person to say, fuck it, don't do anything. You're all like really busy and stressed, and you've got 8 children between 2 careers. And give it a break. You've proven yourself. Like, Mum would be like, why are you still doing this, number one?
Yeah, go into the country and go enjoy your life.
But I think also there is definitely an aspect of but there's definitely an aspect of having children and having the mum we had, and she was the best mum and the most loving, natural, unaffected, like pure angel mum. So I think there is definitely, when I'm screaming at my children going, maybe I could possibly reflect upon what my mother might do.
You feel mom going, honey, Stella.
I didn't plan to have kids at that point. I literally, mum died, and a week later I was like, I am going to become an alcoholic. I'm going to drink. I'm going to get trashed for the rest of my life. And literally a week later, I like, probably mum was like, what one thing can I do to stop her from doing all that? And I was literally pregnant a week later.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then he was born within a year. So that kind of started that ball rolling.
When was the moment in both of your careers where you were like, you know, I'm a grown up now?
It happened gradually, because every single one of my reviews and interviews was only ever, what's it like being Paul McCartney's daughter? And every headline was, with a little help from her friends, and like every single thing in my life was like, really?
Oh, God.
Never ended.
Yep.
So I remember gradually coming out of that, and then it was like, you actually have proven yourself, and, you know, sustainability and all that kind of stuff. And I guess one of the more recent moments is when I actually was invited to go to the G7 in Cornwall with your president and 7 world leaders. And it was me, and Prince Charles asked me to go. And I was kind of like, what, really? Like, surely, you know, I just thought, when somebody says it's just you and the 7 world leaders and Prince Charles and the Queen, you're like, oh, yeah, that's like, really, that's 50 people in a room. And actually, I'm busy and I've got a collection to do. And I remember calling Dad and saying, oh, my God, I think, like, tomorrow I'm going down to go. Like, it was that short notice. And I remember calling him going, actually, I'm a bit nervous. And he was like, oh, you know, just remember, they're normal people and they've got a problem, and you have solutions for their problems. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm like a grown-up now. You know, like, not the time 100 where is that where you're going? Because I will never talk to you again.
No, you are definitely not a grown-up that night. No, but that was a big moment. The time 100 was like a coming out party almost, because it was such a big deal. It was like you and Oprah and,
can I, do you want to hear quickly that story? It's such a traumatic, like, I'm sweating. I hate you. Oh, it was the worst night of my life. So basically, I get the time 100. I'm like, I'm half American, major. This is like, boy, everyone, all my family in America are going to really love me. They'll be really proud of me. So I'm like, oh, I need, they're like, you've got a table, bring some friends. So I'm like, Kate, do you want to come? Liv, do you want to come? Husband, I can't remember. I literally don't even remember the night apart from the horror. Walking into the room and the woman from Time 100 says, Stella, oh, you know, we were wondering if you could just say a few words. Like, there's a couple of people who will get up that are receiving the Time 100. And if you could just say a couple of words, like one memory that inspired you from your childhood. And I'm like, blood comes out my body. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you can't say no. But you're like, what do you mean? Oh, it's no big deal. Da, da, da. They're like, just busk it. I'm like, no, surely. It's no biggie. Look at her face. Look at Kate's like drawing out blood. So we go to the table and it's like the night begins. And they're like, and the first person to get up and speak, Michelle freaking Obama. So Michelle Obama gets up. She's on a podium. She gets on stage. It's like
a big round.
She's just got in. They've just got in. It's like a week after they get into the White House. The guy who writes all the speeches is getting a Time 100. I'm like, okay, so that's the first person to get up with this little impromptu speak. Second person to get up, Oprah Winfrey. So Oprah gets up and she gets every Time 100. She's like, and she's Oprah Winfrey. So she's like, wah, 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 wah. And then I can next, Stella McCartney. And literally.
She had to follow Oprah.
Oh, my God.
It was like. Okay.
Oh, my God.
She had to follow Michelle Obama.
And Oprah.
I cannot remember one word that I said. All I remember is looking down occasionally at Kate, and she was like, she was so horrified. My husband going, just like, what the fuck are you saying? And I remember looking around and they had all the screens and all I could, they just had me on every screen. And I was like,
it was a very,
it's like acid trip.
Yeah, it really was. Oh. It was a very unprepared big moment that wasn't expected.
Did you come through or did you not?
She did. No. Yes, you did. No, it was fine. I mean, it was fine. She did.
It was a disaster. And I don't remember one word that I said. You know, when you're mid speech, and you don't even know what's coming out of your mouth. It was that moment where you're like, blah, 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 and you can't even hear words. I mean, it was horror.
But
horror.
But you blacked out, basically.
She blacked out.
You blacked out.
I mean, she did. Right? It was like a blackout. But, you know, I've watched you grow up, right? And so I've seen from... You know, but there's something that I think will always set Stella and Marion and the whole family apart from everything else, which is there is this just honest. You're always honest. You really do believe in what you guys believe, and you follow through with everything that you do, and you're all so committed to your families, no matter what. And like that, I think comes through in everything that you guys do.
Well, back at you.
You really are carrying the legacy, which is why I said that. You know, I think your mom would be more than proud. She's just shining on you guys all the time, you know.
And what's it like to be Paul McCartney's daughter?
we get by from our friends.
Mary, tell us about the new cookbook that you're doing.
I want you guys to be one of my subjects, because basically I'm coming up with a recipe and then I'll come to you and bring it to you. We eat it together. I take portraits of you and then it'll be the art. It's called Feeding Creativity, so it's creative people.
You all have to be
anecdote. Anecdote from the day and the recipes. And so that I'm working on that with Tashin. So that'll be
out next spring.
Actually, one thing that I did yesterday that I kind of realized was quite cool, actually. I kind of underplayed it. It's International Women's Month. And I just designed for Minnie Mouse the first ever pantsuit. She's actually not in a dress.
Oh, my God.
That is great.
That's the cutest thing. You know, Ronnie's like obsessed with Minnie Mouse, which is weird because we don't watch
it. I'll hook you up.
Yeah.
But yesterday I was like, I had to do a little thing for it. And I was like, actually, that's kind of amazing. Not only is it an animal, but one of the most famous female animals. And she's only ever been in a dress. God damn it.
We got to do the speed round. Yeah. One word to describe the other as a child.
Stella was very funny. Oh, one word. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Stella was funny.
Can I do this too?
Entertaining.
Stella was bossy, but I am too, which is why we're really...
Mary's perfect. And Kate's fucking bitch.
Okay, one word to describe the other now.
Friend.
Yeah, Mary, best friend.
Oh, you guys.
Yeah, we love each other.
One word to describe your childhood.
Chaotic.
Yeah, I would say one way to do our childhood would be opposites. 1 minute you're in a field, the next minute you're in a 200,000 stadium. Mm-hmm. Just opposing.
Yeah.
We're not very good on the one word.
I hate this shit, by the way.
favorite place to be as a kid?
Scotland. We could have said that at the same time. 1, 2, 3.
Scotland.
Who's more spontaneous?
We're both quite similar.
I would find that hard to answer.
Who's more type A?
See how spontaneous my answer was. I went,
Well, I would say that we're both sort of similar. So I don't know. I feel like these days we kind of do things spontaneously together. We're like, right, we're going to go off and do this and stay the night somewhere and do it. Let's give that one to Stella. She's spontaneous.
Who's more type
She's
A?
My inspiration. What is type A?
Alpha.
Yeah. Like, what who's more like, I don't. Come on, guys. Come on. Okay. Who is the more creative cook? I'm gonna think maybe it's Mary. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Who is more daring?
Maybe Stella. Do you think?
Back in the day. What are we talking now or past?
Just in general.
I'm going for it. I don't know. I think we're both fabulous.
These are hard because it's like, it's sort of, it's very hard. We're more of debating.
It doesn't mean that the other one isn't those things.
Who's a stricter parent?
Oh my God.
We got a double whammy.
So not true. It is you.
Really?
100%.
Stella thinks Mary is the stricter parent. Mary thinks Stella is the stricter parent. Oh. What was your favorite family?
I don't think my kids do the homework and the extra things.
You make them go to bed.
I'm obsessed with them sleeping.
Food-wise, you're so much better with your kids than I.
What was your favorite family tradition?
Birthdays. Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Cute. Favorite book as a kid?
Charlotte's Web. Eloise at the Plaza. Oh, love that.
Oh, that was one of mine. Oh, my God. First childhood crush?
Gene Wilder.
She's got her.
I loved Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder.
I love Gene Wilder.
Oh my God, that's the best.
He's the best. That's
the best childhood crush ever.
Gene Wilder.
I don't know.
Stella.
I think Adam and the Ants or like Billy Idol or someone. Actually, Bowie. Bowie all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Dave. David. It's a little bit incestuous and weird.
First kiss.
My first kiss was Luke One. Hi, Luke. Hope you're listening.
Mary?
Mine was just any boy during Kiss Chase. We played Kiss Chase before school and I just kissed
any old, boys. Any
Ollie,
boy.
Ollie
any boy
kiss
that
chase.
Caught me, I would kiss.
There's something called Kissing Girls where we run and the girls would be like, and I'd be like, I tripped. Oh, no.
First concert can't happen with you guys.
Wait.
First concert that wasn't a Beatles.
Ooh. Probably David Bowie. Our sister Heather took me to see. I don't know. No, actually, me and Stella went. I have a really childhood memory of us going to a Queen concert in Wembley Stadium. And then because mum and dad took us to the after party and it was like, I remember opening, they took us to the thing and we had to go to bed because the hotel doors opened and it was like Elton John and somebody else there. And I was like,
you have to go to bed.
Me and Stella were like, yay, party. And then they were like, you have to go into this room and go to sleep. And I was like,
they did that all the time.
Oh my God.
Last question. Do you want to ask it?
So it's a two-part question. We asked this to pretty much everybody. If there's something about your sister, what is that thing that you would love to take from, meaning, or to emulate, meaning something that she has that you wish you did? And on the flip side of that, what is something that you would like to alleviate from your sibling to where you wish that if that was gone, their life might be a little easier?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can answer that first for Mary. I think Stella is, as I said before, I think she's incredibly funny. And she really, literally, I think if she wasn't a fashion designer, she should be a stand-up comedian. So I often am like, I wish I could be as funny as her. Literally, she is the person that makes me laugh and just so clever and funny. And if I was going to alleviate something, it would definitely be to sort of take any anxiety away from her and stress.
Mm. I would say the same for alleviating.
Mm.
And for what I would want of yours,
nothing.
No, just the calm, unconditional overview that you have. You have a very, you're very good at processing and coming out quickly at a very specific, pure, uncomplicated, but the right answer.
Mm.
Perfect. Did you get what that meant? I didn't get that.
I got it. They got it. I'm going to work on it.
I love you guys.
Thank you.
I miss you. Thank you for coming on our podcast and sharing your relationship.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson and Oliver Hudson.
Producer is Allison Bresnick.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.
If you want to show us some love, rate the show and leave us a review. This show is powered by Simplecast.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.